Ocho on Twitch saying, excuse me if I don't consider the Astros a World Series contender. I'd love you for you to explain that, Ocho. I want to know why you don't think that the Astros are a World Series contender. I very much think that they're a World Series contender right now. They're very much a World Series contender at this moment.
The question then becomes, is it more because of what they have been able to do offensively or with their shortcomings, or is Ocho looking more at the competition and judging the Astros by what the other teams are doing?
6927, the Astros don't get enough credit for last year. Their pitching was absolutely shot, and they still made a run. That's 100% true. That pitching staff was on their last leg. All right, let's give away a couple of tickets. Sir Rod Stewart, legendary two-time rock and roll Hall of Famer, inducted, singer-songwriters making his way to Houston for the 2022 tour. Rod Stewart with special guest Cheap Trick Air coming to the Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion Saturday, July 2nd. Caller number, there's already callers on the line. Cheaters. Caller
block them right
number
now. Block them, block them.
Four. Caller four to 713-780-3776 wins a four-pack of tickets to see the show. If you don't win, you better get your tickets. Get your tickets at livenation.com. Caller four, 713-780-3776.
Top four Rod Stewart songs all time while your white man's over biting the guitar there.
There's just so many that I don't like to categorize any as my favorites. It's like our kids, right? We all love our kids equally. You can't pick one over the others. And because Rod Stewart has so many bangers that I just can't, put together a Mount Rushmore. Again, it's like picking between your favorite kids. I just can't do it. I feel like I'd be disrespecting Sir Rod Stewart if I were to put together that list. What's yours?
I mean, you can go up and down the list.
That's what I said.
I mean, you could go. I mean, I'm talking about the actual list. I mean, if you want my body and you think I'm sexy.
I don't. No.
Well, but those are the lyrics
no,
to the song,
you.
Not what
Rather
I'm hoping that you think about.
713.
Maggie? I mean, there's lots of them.
Is that your daughter's name, Maggie?
No.
I'm just kidding. This is a banger. This is a banger. I told you. They're all so good. You know, one thing that I like to do in a long road trip is put on my my music of choice, whether it's Pandora, whether it's Apple Music, whether it's Spotify. Just type in Rod Stewart and let myself lose my mind.
You're a yacht rocker?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
You
Who's
and
not?
Other,
who
you,
ain't?
You and other.
Who doesn't?
Well, I know who is.
I don't know what a yacht rocker is.
Some major market radio guy.
What is a yacht rocker?
They have a, it's only in the summer now on satellite radio. They have a channel called Yacht Rock, and it's kind of like, it would be like, what would be the...
It's obviously the music you listen to on your yacht, Jeremy. Like, come on now.
Don't
I
have
mean,
one.
That they make fun of it, but literally, if you were going out on a cruise and you wanted like some real, like Kenny Loggins and Christopher Cross and really like soft, fluffy, easygoing music.
All right. Sounds fine. I listen to lots of sports. King of Twitch saying it doesn't feel like they are a World Series contender with the hitting deficiency. I get that. I get that. But I do think that there's room for improvement for the offense. But even if there's not, I mean, you give me to a playoff series with Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez, and Lance McCullers, I like my chances. Yeah, I don't care who I'm playing.
See, I don't mind you saying Framber. And you know I'm already counted him out for the most part. And whatever he does try and give the Astros is just a bonus. But I can't count on Lance McCullers. I would be better off and better suited. I would feel better if you said, and Luis Garcia, if he was Luis Garcia, you know, the way he has been for more consistently yep. than recently. But I think I would feel better about that. I just can't feel good about having to have any kind of reliability factor with Lance.
Luis Garcia was your two last year, and now we're like talking about him as being a potential four in the playoffs. Ocho got back to us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Astros have a streaky, poor situational hitting offense. That's true so far to this point. I think that could be random. With questionable starting pitching. See, I can't give him the questionable starting yeah. pitching.
You know what? You can call it brother-in-lawing if you want. But while one guy has a stinker of a game, normally the rest of the rotation picks it up. There's been spot starts that have been bad. We know Urquidy went through a bad stretch. But we talk about the fact that Framber, since we started playing the song, and we joke about it, but Framber has found it, figured it out, and he has been consistently solid when he takes the mound, and you add him to Verlander. Now you got your top two. Now you're looking at Garcia, and you're looking at if Christian Javier remains in the rotation or if Odorizzi comes back. But you have options that can give you the 3 and 4 when you need them, because you're going to be in the playoffs already. So there's no rush to figure it out. It's just let the dust settle, figure out the injuries, and know that you got several guys to choose from for at least two more spots in the rotation.
Not Brad Kellner texting in saying it's baseball, Branham in big capital letters. The only thing you capitalized there. Thanks for the respect, not Brad Kellner. The team with the best record almost never wins. This ain't football, you jabroni. I smell what you're cooking, Brad Kellner. I'll see you on the corner of Know Your Role Boulevard and SmackDown Lane or whatever the case may be. The Astros don't have the best record in the American League. So I'm really not sure what your point is, not Brad Kellner. The Yankees lead the Astros by like 7 games in the American League. So I don't know what you mean there. Like, I say all the time that the baseball playoffs are a crapshoot. I just said the Astros might not even play in the Yankees in the ALCS if the Astros are lucky enough to reach their 6th straight ALCS. I understand that baseball is not football. Best teams win 60% of the time in baseball. Well, so I don't really, like, do you, can you translate what not BK is telling us?
No, but what I'd say is when you look at the World Series, the Astros were a heavy favorite. They were a heavy favorite going into the playoffs, too. The Braves were not. But when you get hot at the right time, anything can happen. And you look at the runs that were sustained during certain seasons in baseball, even the year that the Astros and a lot of people, including myself, believe should have beaten the Royals. But the Royals were an upstart team that just decided to catch fire at the right time and run through everybody. So I understand the fact that the number one seed or the best team doesn't always win. But more times than not, the other thing that you're factoring in is that you're not going to suffer a significant injury in the middle of your playoff run or, God forbid, before you even get to your playoff run, because that can absolutely turn everything upside down. I believe that the odds were made and everybody felt the way they felt about the Astros because Lance McCullers was your horse.
Yeah.
And suddenly he not only was out of the stable, he was out of the barn, he was off the property, and he wasn't coming back.
That was a good pull there with the stable. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The Houston Astros, like I think that they spoiled us so much because they're always one of the best pitching staffs. They always are one of the best offenses that they've had both. They've been able to rely on both during this run. And because of them spoiling us, now that the fact that the Astros offense, and it's really like the offense, if you look at like the triple slash stats, not so bad. They're in the top half of the league in on base, top half of the league in slugging. They just stink at scoring runs right now. There's two reasons I think why. But I get offended by that because saying that the Astros aren't contenders when they're one of the betting favorites. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
But also, Jeremy, excuse me, but if you win the division, aren't you a contender?
I mean, that's now saying if you get a seat at the dance,
but wild
everybody's
is
a contender.
Different story. But if you're winning your division by a sizable margin.
I mean, do you consider the Cowboys a contender? So, like, I would
hesitate
there. That's
football. It's a little different, but I think that when you go through 162 games, when you have plenty of time to weed out good, bad, and indifferent, and you have close to a double-digit lead in the division by this time in the season, and you know you're going to be in, then I have to, regardless of the Vegas odds aspect, you have to believe you're a good enough team, an established enough team, that you're going to contend. Because like you, I mean, well, look, we just got to say it. If you're in, you got a chance. You got a chance to win it. But in order to be a contender, you got to get in, and you're going to be in basically on a cakewalk.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Houston Astros, would you consider them contenders? A lot of people say no. Right now, the Astros have the second-best odds to get through the AL. The Yankees, who have the best record, are plus 220. The Astros, who are second in the AL, plus 300.
Yankees are starting to feel like the Jazz to me.
They're playing really well.
Regular season, they can blow your doors off. But until they prove that they can get back there, what's it been since 2010?
Mm-hmm.
They can get in, but they don't look like the same team when they get into the playoffs.
The thing that worries me from like an opponent perspective with the Yankees is their pitching looks a lot better than what it's been in the past. Because now you have Severino pitching well. Garrett Cole's been pitching well. You have, what's his name? Hector the Molester, who's been pitching very well. He's been quite a story there in New York. 2920, the not believing in the Astros being a World Series team probably stems from the trauma of 2019. Why, though? Like, why are we looking 3 years ago, the trauma of 3 years ago, when they went to the World Series is the reason why you're not believing now?
I know as a show we believe in the power of our songs and us. We just believe we have a lot of power on this show. And I want to ask you guys if this is meaningful to you at all. I bet the Rams to win the Super Bowl in, like, week three. I bet the Warriors to win the NBA championship in December, and that's looking pretty good. I put $30 on the Astros to win the World Series like a month ago.
You think they're a contender then?
You
know how it's like the Madden jinx and the SI jinx? This is the Brendan blessing.
I love it.
I think that
you realize how powerful a statement you just made?
That's what I'm saying. But no, I hear what you're saying here about being spoiled really well. Because I know we're going to talk about the Astros pitching in more depth later. But in reality, there's nowhere that I look at and say like, glaring weakness. We're talking regularly about places that they can be better, not things that are dragging them down, if that makes sense.
Here's what I like about all of this, is that there's no set rule that because we're saying as currently constructed, there's no rule set in stone that says, but you can't improve and get better at some point too. So you're doing all you need to do right now to get in, to win your division. So therefore, I believe that at least makes you a contender because you're in the dance. You're dancing. Your feet are on the floor. But nothing is holding back James Click from going go-for-it mode. He can go full balls-out go-for-it mode and mortgage the farm, or he has tons of money to play with and he can take on a big salary in a trade, or he can look at a multitude of different ways that he can improve this team, and it immediately takes you even higher up on the chart in terms of your chances to win it all.
7629, I think people are confusing contenders for favorites. They are favorites, but definitely contenders. I agree with you, 7629, but I hear people in this city that talk behind microphones saying the Astros aren't good enough to win a World Series, which I completely disagree with. Also, TNT in our Twitch line is saying, in our Twitch chat, saying that the reason that the Astros aren't scoring as many runs as they should is because of the way Dusty sets the lineups. I think there's two reasons why the Astros aren't scoring runs as much as they should, because the triple slash stats should score more runs. The on-base, the slugging, they should be producing more runs. I think it's one, runners in scoring position. They're not hitting well with runners in scoring position, not great situational hitting. But I do think that Dusty and the way he sets lineups leads to the lack of runs as well. You have Alex Bregman, who is an on-base guy that's not slugging, hitting the middle of the order. You have Jose Altuve, who's slugging, not as great as an on-base guy as he is a slugger, leading off for you. He's got 20-something RBIs, 20 home runs. Put him in the three hole with Brantley on base. Even though that Bregman stinks and is lousy hitting the ball right now, he's getting on base. Get those guys on base ahead of your sluggers. I think you would score more runs. Not rocket science.
No, and like we spoke about as it relates to Altuve, too. It's worth your time to tinker Dusty now as much as we nitpick him for tinkering or you know the kind of quirky ways he does things when you do have a substantial lead in the division to try other things. Maybe get Bregman going by taking the pressure of being a power hitter or expected power hitter in the lineup off of him. As much as I've been adamant about Altuve being the leadoff hitter after we've talked about it multiple times, right now in June with the lead you have, give him a break. Push him to the top of the lineup. See if he can parlay the walks into some more just getting on base, and he'll get back to taking the ball the other way. But let Altuve have more situations with more guys on base where he's not going to lose the at-bat. He still bats high enough in the order that he'll get his at-bats in a game. But when he comes up, they're more meaningful because when he does get hits, he's got guys to knock in.
713-780-3776. All right, when we come back, let's get into the Stutz 11 observations and see if they move Blanker's needle. We'll discuss next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun. Sports. ESPN 97.5. Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
A lot of folks on our Twitch chat, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5, discussing the Dusty Baker lineups, especially just the lineup that he has currently. He's got Altuve, Brantley, Bregman, Yordan. Tucker has now been promoted over Yuli Gurriel against righties and lefties as the number five hole hitter. And look, that's going to change almost every day with days off, things like that. 713-780-ESPN. Also, lots of people thinking that the Astros aren't a true contender to win the World Series, that they can't win it this year with what they have. 713-780-ESPN if you agree. 713-780-3776 if you disagree. Brandon T. texting in, the Astros can get hot at any time and run through any team. And this is a great point and one that I'm embarrassed I didn't bring up. They also have a guy named Yordan Alvarez who can single-handedly win a game for you on any given day.
Fair.
I mean, the Yankees have that too in Aaron Judge, if we're being completely honest with you. But Yordan Alvarez can put a team on his back. Well, you're saying, well, he can pitch around them. They don't have to throw to him. And that's true. But now you're giving a free bag. You're getting on base. And Kyle Tucker, I think, starting to get a little bit hot too.
Yeah, no, and Tucker did it the other night when you were basically looking like doomsday going into the eighth inning. And he completely changed the complexion of the entire game with one swing as well. That's the difference. They can beat you if they have to with small ball, though Dusty doesn't like to do it. They can beat you with guys like Brantley and others that can get you the average as well as the pop. But you look at guys like – you look at the Yankees lineup, it's predicated on power, with the exception of what? DJ LeMahieu is a guy that hits for average. But when you look at Rizzo and you look at Judge and you look at Gallo and you look at all these guys – that are just big honking dudes trying to swing and break down the fences of the rinky-dink toy park at Yankee Stadium with the short fences, they're capitalizing. But when you start facing good pitching and you got to manufacture runs, I think that's a different story. That's a lot more challenging for a team like the Yankees than it is and would be for a team like the Astros.
Someone else texting, and you can get in on this, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Look, and the Astros also have, I think, four guys that are all right around 800 OPS, which that's a fair number. I mean, the Astros don't have poor hitters up and down through the lineup. Do they have some holes? Yeah, most teams have holes. Is Maldi, despite having two extra base hits and getting hot a little bit in June, a hole? Yeah, he's a hole. Center field, is that a bit of a a weak spot in the lineup? Yeah, it is a bit of a weak spot. Will Jake Myers solidify that? You hope. I don't think it's a guarantee. And then right now, Yuli's a hole, and even Bregman, even though he's getting on base at an above-average clip, he's not giving you what you would want, especially from three-hole hitter. And somebody texting in, batting at the top of the order would put more pressure on Bregman, but I like the thought process. Here's where I pull from something that you said yesterday. To me, like, look, we know that Alex Bregman hit 31 home runs in 2018. We know that Alex Bregman hit 41 homers in 2019. Alex Bregman is no longer that player. We should not be hoping and wishing that Alex Bregman hits 30 home runs in any given season. But I think that Alex Bregman, because he's still hitting in the three hole, is like, I need to hit 30 home runs. I need to knock the ball out of the park. You talked about it yesterday. When he was first coming up, it was line shot, ball on the gap. Maybe he yanks one out of there. He needs to be a Dustin Pedroia, if we're being completely honest with you. And I think moving him to the top spot instead of the middle of the spot, the middle of the order, changes his mindset of like, okay, I don't need to hit home runs anymore. My job is a table setter. I need to get on base for Brantley, for Altuve, for Yordan,
for
Tucker. That's
the focus that started the thought process with me yesterday, continuing our own Brian McDonald brought it up to us a week or two ago about that he's not taking the ball the other way as much, that he's being too, he's not being aggressive enough at just going with the pitch on the outside. And to that, that's the mindset of you looking at. When you're in the middle of the top part of the lineup, you are expected to be a power hitter to drive in runs. That is not what you want Alex Bregman to be thinking about right now. You want Alex Bregman to get back to covering the outside corner. I mentioned yesterday the fact that when he gets down in counts almost every single at-bat these days, it's because he's laying off the early first pitch fastball on the outside because he can't pull it, so that he can't pull it with power, and he can't get the kind of results that in his mind he thinks he's expected to get. If he just goes the other way with that pitch, you're not going to get a better pitch to hit. But if you get a flat fastball that you can drive the other way and go to right field or right center field, you're doing your job.
See, I think a lot of that's philosophy of hitting three hole in the leadoff spot. Like,
it shouldn't,
I'll be honest, it should not alter your mindset at the plate. It should not, alter your game plan from being in the three spot versus being the leadoff hitter. But if you're seeing a dude that's taking a pitch, a good pitch to hit, but on the outside part of the plate, it's because Bregman knows he can't hit that ball with authority.
Yes.
Like, he can't yank that out of there. He's not going to hit an opposite field home run. But at the top of the order, hey, you single into right field, get on board. You know what I mean?
And I also think that it depends on who the player is to say that, what the philosophy should be and how you handle each and every at-bat. Because I think that Alex Bregman's going to have expectations for himself. He's also got an ego. He also knows what he's done in the past. And he also knows what he thinks is expected of him, not only by his team, his manager, and his franchise, but by his fan base. And those things all are weighing into his approach when he goes to the plate. What should be a guy with as good of an eye at the plate as he has is to just go with the pitch that you get, to take the best pitch you're going to see and not miss it. Because that's a lot of times when you get indecisive, like, should I have taken that pitch to the opposite field? I need something I got to drive. I got to do something here, either get a rally started, keep a rally going, or get a big pop that's going to drive in a few through my teammates on base. No, you know what you need to do? You need to make sure that if he makes a mistake, leaves something up, or gives you something flat, that you hit it hard anywhere. It doesn't have to be to the left side.
No. See, I mean, the Astros, when you look at them, you just look at the guys in the lineup. Jose Altuve is obviously a plus offensive player. Yordan Alvarez is one of the best offensive players in all of baseball. Kyle Tucker is a plus offensive player. Michael Brantley, even though he does not slug, is a plus offensive player. And Jeremy Peña, who's currently on the injured list, is a plus offensive player. The Astros have five guys with an OPS over 800. Like, that is going to be an offense that scores runs.
That will play.
The reason that it's not playing right now is because, to me, like, we're going to obviously nitpick Dusty Baker in the lineup all the time because that's our jobs. But to me, the obvious answer of why the Astros aren't scoring as many runs as the OPS would tell you it should, as the on-base percentage would tell you that it should, is because they're poor right now with runners in scoring position. They have not been a good situational hitting team. They've not been good in those RBI situations coming up with a big two-out hit. Runner at third, less than two outs. Pop up on the infield or a strikeout instead of driving in the run. I believe that stuff can be kind of random, honestly. I think that stuff can ebb and flow through the course of a year. So I hope that I'm right there and that we start to see more ebbs and more flows with the offense and the run production totals. But overall, the Astros have good offensive players. I think that the runners in scoring positions got to be a better situation. The Astros have to hit better in those situations. And look, I don't think that Dusty's going to tinker. I don't think he's going to do the Bregman for Altuve flip that we want. I would love for him to. But also, maybe it's a trade. You know, maybe it's a Trey Mancini that you trade for and you put him in the three spot. I really think that the Astros are close to exploding offensively.
No, and the thing is that's why I said you have the luxury of you're not locked into your roster right now in the middle of June for your playoffs. And you're going to have ample opportunities to do what you see fit that needs to be done with this lineup. The difference between the last several years and this year might just be one guy in the lineup that of the other five guys that you mentioned, finding one more guy consistently to do it, because in years past, you didn't have all that much more consistency when you knew the bottom three spots in your order were not good. They were somewhat liabilities. And you can go all the way back to when Josh Reddick was there as well. And the latter years of Josh Reddick, he wasn't a guy you were relying on to get any big hits or get hit for average or do anything that's going to help you. The catcher position has always been kind of a wash away. But when you look at that and say, hey, if we just find one more guy in this lineup to find it where it's been lost, you're going to be okay. But then on top of that, if James Click has the resources to be and the approval of his owner already to go, hey, and if I need to, I'm going to go look at Trey Mancini, or I'm going to go find Bell in Washington, or I'm going to find somebody somewhere that's going to make an even bigger difference for me. Now maybe I got seven. Now I've got better than most in terms of what I lay out there on a nightly basis.
Extends the lineup, right? 1-5-4-9, what about Yordan leading off? That to me reeks of desperation.
I don't like it.
Look, that to me is if you're completely reeling and you're looking for something completely desperate. I don't. It's not the worst thought in the world because I'm not opposed to sluggers leading off. The Yankees do it a lot with Aaron Judge.
And Schwarber's been doing it no matter where he goes.
Yeah, so I don't hate it. But to me, the most important spot in the batting order is the four spot. To me, every single time that Dusty Baker is filling out the lineup card, his first name that he should write is Yordan Alvarez in the four spot and then figure out the lineup around him. Well, I love Tucker hitting fifth. I don't want to mess with Tucker anymore.
But
now
the other thing is that at least you got a spot where Yordan sits, where the table could be set for him no matter every single time he comes up to the plate. Yep. I don't need him to get the extra at bat. I don't need to get him, get on one more time. I need him to do exactly what he's been doing all year, which is he'll still hit for average. He'll hit with two strikes and get you a base hit or a double. But when you need him to mash, he's sitting there. Not only is he mashing, but he's mashing with the ducks on the pond that give you a game changer every time he hits a home run.
See, I want three on-base guys ahead of Yordan that could potentially be on base for when Yordan's up. And look, if the Astros go three up, three down in the first inning, well, then Yordan Alvarez is leading off the second. So not a ton of difference between four and one if you look at the first and the second inning. But if he does get an at-bat in the first inning, you're talking about Yordan with a runner on base, and that's something
he
that I can't get
yesterday.
Rid of. Yeah, I can't get rid of the idea of Yordan batting in the first with people on base. And if nobody gets on base, well, then there you go. He's leading off the second. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll talk Astros with Jim Duquette when he joins us at 2 o'clock. But coming up next, let's get into the Astutes 11 observation. If they move Blank's needle, that one we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Someone's texting in about the Jake Myers 60-day IL move. That doesn't really mean anything. Once Jake Myers is done with his rehab assignment, the Astros can still call him up. It's not 60 days from when they put him on there. It's 60 days from when the injury happened. So that's just procedural. I don't read too much into that. If Myers is ready to go when at the end of his rehab assignment's done, he's going to be on the big league team, and the Astros will figure it out. If he's not ready, they'll send him to Sugar Land, and he'll spend some more time getting ready. We'll see what happens in a couple of weeks. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So Stoots was out at minicamp Tuesday and Wednesday, the Texans told the players they didn't have to be there for the third day, at least outside. I think they were doing meetings and all that stuff because they got enough work in. But here's the 11 observations, and if you want to check these out, head over to houston.sportsmap.com. Cody does a great job covering the Texans, General Junior. But we like to talk about the 11 observations from Stutzer and see if they move Blanker's needle. Number one, from minicamp this past week, Laramie Tunsil made his return after electing from voluntary OTAs not to show up. Does that move Blanker's needle?
A little bit, because for a guy that has had with every possible validation necessary, there has been reason to question his attitude, his desire to play here for the Houston Texans, his desire to live up to the contract that he signed when he said he so richly deserved it. So the fact that he sat out voluntary camp also made people wonder a little bit more. The fact that he's here, the fact that they had no one else missing, the fact that it looks like he's in good shape too, and that he will be ready to go for camp, I will say that moves my needle a little bit.
The thing that I see with like Laramie, though, is like, what's the net positive, right? Like, are you getting more victories with Laramie? Is he learning the offense any more by being at voluntary OTA? I just, look, I think that, like you said, I think it does move the needle a little. But I think where I have fun with it is the over-exaggeration of how much that needle moves. Like you said, for a little, I think most people are like, it moves it a lot, which I find to be a crazy overreaction.
Again, even more so than what I said about the young guys, just make sure that you're in camp and you're ready to go and you got a chance to play the season. It matters more to me in week five or six when you don't know if you might be already out of it, but the team might not be playing its best football, to see if a hangnail is going to keep him out for 2 months, or if the fact that he's going to say, I'm playing through whatever's going on, my team needs me right now because they need some veteran leadership while we figure this thing out. I need to see that just how much buy-in there is for him. We know where his chips lie because he's cashing checks every 2 weeks. But you know what? In order to be the guy that this team expected you to be when they put all that money on the table and did their part for you, do your part for them and show up every day ready to work, ready to do the best job you can at left tackle and be a leader in the locker room.
Number two is pretty similar. He says that he's been critical of Tunsil's choice to be absent from workouts because there is a new offensive system, new offensive line coaches, couple of new faces and new places along the offensive line too, which I think are valid reasons. Mm-hmm. I think you can, you know, if again, we're looking at it, how much it moves the needle. I think it's more little than large. So looking at it from that point, now that it is a new offensive system, new OC, new offensive line coaches, does that move Blanker's needle?
No, it makes it even more important. It's not just an average year in the NFL in the offseason for a team that's just, you know, going from point A to point B. No, this is a team that, because of those variables, it's even more hyper important that he's there. Because it's not the same old system. It's not Bill's system and the same play calling and everything the same as you've been used to. This is a whole new ball game, and you are being counted on whether you like it or not. And you got to believe, as an NFL football player, no matter what you're making and what happened last year, you got to realize that this offensive line has the potential to be far better than it's been maybe since he's been here.
Yeah.
And in doing that and saying that and him realizing that, it even puts more of a focal point on the fact that he, as the veteran, you know, anchor of that offensive line, it's great that he's here.
Watching the battle between the two tackles, this is number three, Tunsil and Titus, and the edge rushers was fun. The tackles had more wins, but there were some hard reps between Jerry Hughes and Titus Howard. The oboe won a hard rep against Tunsil, forcing the quarterback off his spot. How much does that move Blanker's needle?
Not as much. Not as much at all. I mean, look, I'm glad that there's a spirit and a level of competition that's going on within practices every day, but this is practice every day with shells at best, with little to no contact, with guys just kind of going through the motions. Those are the kind of things that I'm not going to lose any sleep over or have any worry about the needle moving on.
I am intrigued by the defensive line, but them going up against like Howard and Tunsil during minicamps, not something that's going to move that a whole lot. Number four, Derek Stingley practiced a little more. How does that move Blanker's needle?
Again, my stance has been on Stingley. I'm not even worried about him or even thinking about him till camp opens up. And then if he's not practicing, it's bad. If he's practicing, it's good. I'm glad that he's out there with his team. I'm glad he's understanding and learning the system. But he can do that whether he's practicing or not. Get some reps in. Great. Just don't hurt yourself, kid.
Number five, the concern for Stingley, Kenyon Green, and even John Mechie III dissipated. This was the quote we listened to yesterday where he talked about Stingley and Green coming back after offseason surgery. And then he was kind of vague about John Mechie. But the fact that these rookies, at least two of the three, will be 100% and John Mechie has a chance.
Yeah, and that's, as we discussed previously, I think it's great. I think the fact that they're all expected to be ready to go on time for the first day of training camp is extremely important. But I'll also throw the caveat in that I threw out yesterday too. If Mechie's not, I don't care, because he's far too important in the long term and whenever the short term starts for him to rush him back before he's ready to play. You're not trying to win a Super Bowl and you're light on receivers that are going to make a difference. You're drafting a guy as high as you did, giving up extra capital to get. To be a guy that is going to be a necessary cog in what's going to be on this roster for this year and going forward, he's got to be 100% or I don't need to see him.
I care more about the development of the rookies than I care about the wins. If I could trade two wins and it leads to like 120% more development, give me the development. I care way more about that than I do victories for the Texans in 2022. Number six, Nico Collins was one of the highlights of this workout. How much does it move your needle that Nico Collins was showing out during minicamp?
It'll move it a little because of the fact that there's so much that we're expecting and relying mm-hmm. him to be better than he was a year ago. But because of who we have on this roster receiver-wise, he is going to play an integral part that you need to see more from him. You need to see him kind of in year two take that jump. Not just a baby step of getting your feet wet, of showing you can play in the league a little bit. Take a jump to where you can be a guy that can be counted on, relied on. You don't have to be the one yet, you're the two. But show that you could be a capable and reliable two that's doing what's necessary. So that moves it.
It moves it for me, too, because I want to see Nico Collins be the number two receiver in three receiver sets with mm-hmm. what you have. Like Nico, Brandon Cooks, and Mechie should be the core once Mechie is back. Those should be your three receivers. So I want to see what Nico Collins looks like in year two. It's one of the, like, again, I'm looking very much at the young players this year to excite me about the Texans, and I am excited about the Texans. He's one of the few two-year players that I'm really looking forward to seeing. Number seven, until John Mechie is back, all the rest of the wideout spots are a battle. Chris Moore, somebody that's mentioned. Philip Dorsett, former first-rounder, somebody mm-hmm. that's mentioned. How much does that move your needle?
I mean, they have some depth. See if they still have anything left in the tank before I get excited. That's the Daryl Morey philosophy of once you were a former first rounder or a lottery pick, that sticks with you and has extra importance. Not if you can't play dead. I mean, it means someone screwed up in their draft room is what that means. It doesn't mean that you should get, you know, six more opportunities to play in this league and a chance to start. So, you know, if they continue to show that they are making strides towards being someone that can contribute on the team, so be it. If not, not too worried.
Yeah, Moore and Dorsett aren't part of your future plans, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to see them getting 50, 60% of the snaps on game day. So that one, to me, not very high on that list. Number eight, Texans will run the ball better this season.
I mean, they damn well better. They couldn't run it much worse. I mean, my big thing is instead of the fighting Rex Burkheads, at least you got a young guy in the draft. You got a guy that's been there and done it in the previously in your own division in Mac. You put them together and you say, you know what? It should be a better running back room than it was a year ago. And you should see better results coupled with the fact that you have a better offensive line and you went out and spent draft capital in the first round on a guy that should make your running game better too.
Yeah, see, look, the offensive line should be better if they stay healthy. And you mentioned Marlon Mack here, Damian Pierce here. You've downgraded everybody else that were getting a lot of carries towards the end of last season, so it should be better by default. That's something that you should be overly excited about, right? Like, it better be, like you said. Speaking of one of the running backs, Damian Pierce had a two-play stretch where you saw his rookie status. He caught a ball in the backfield, little effort, darted inside, though, where defenders were waiting. He had the sideline, could have scored, but then the very next play showed great vision and burst as he danced through an opening for a touchdown.
This is what these camps are exactly for. This is exactly why you have these camps and you learn. And you hopefully don't make the same mistake twice, or at least not as frequently until you get closer to the regular season. I believe in Pierce. I believe he's got a good upside for this team. I don't know how much I'm going to believe in how much he's going to get the ball this season, but I do believe, as you just alluded to as we go through this list, does he have long-term expectations? Absolutely. So the more he learns now, the better he'll be later, and I'm good with all of it. So that does move it a little bit.
Tyvier Thomas had a solid finish to the season last year. Flown under the radar. He's one of the best slot corners in the NFL. Thomas intercepted Kyle Allen, go Cougs, for a pick six in practice.
Okay.
Move the needle, Blankers?
Nope.
Okay. All right.
How aware of you were of Tavier Thomas before yesterday's practice?
Not very high.
How high were you expecting him to be on your depth chart in the secondary?
I mean, he's probably going to be your nickel corner. So, I mean, you're going to see Thomas play quite a bit.
Okay.
I think he's going to play quite a bit. Last one real quick. Texans have long been overcommitted to kicker Kyeemy Fairbairn. He missed a field goal at the end of a two-minute drill.
If this is the first sign of the first move to get him out of Dodge, so be it. Then I'm ecstatic. This moves the needle more than anything else because of the fact that this dude was the sixth highest paid kicker or higher in the NFL for being as inconsistent as he was able to get you big kicks. I don't need a big salary on the roster for a guy that's been inconsistent like Kyeemy Fairbairn.
You're not being Fairbairn. I love Kyeemy. He's awesome. 713-780-ESPN. Did it move your needle? Any of these observations? 713-780-3776. Speaking of the running game, are the Texans going to be run first with this current regime? And is it okay to be run first in this climate of the NFL? We'll discuss it when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Boy, almost the appropriate segment to sponsor, especially my good friend Gordo, who is in charge. I'll tell you right now, Apollo Men's Health is the place you got to be if you're looking for energy in your life. You want to get that energy back. And quite honestly, from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you have any kind of issues, problems, or you're not performing or feeling like yourself like you used to throughout your years, you can go to Apollo Men's Health and get the help you need. Find the results that you're looking for and feel better about yourself on a daily basis. For men and women, it starts with hormone therapy, and you can get that in a multitude of different fashions and varieties, including being able to administer it yourself at home. They'll teach you how. They'll get you the product. Or you can go into the clinic every week. There's all those different varieties, but the main thing is if you find the one that works for you, it's going to work in more ways than one. You're going to have more energy. You're going to enjoy your days, your nights, and everything in between. You want to get on a workout program, start with a full body composition analysis, and then chart your progress every few weeks. You can see those gains in that progress even when you can't feel them because you're feeling sore and sorry for yourself. You want to recover quicker? HGH peptide therapy. Need stuff for your smoothies like fat burners or powders? They got those too. Two locations to better serve you in your downtown Houston, with a third coming in League City probably by the early stages of July. The best thing you can do is go online, apollomh.com. Book your first appointment and find out that most major insurance is accepted. Discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank, and ESPN 97.5. Get a free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first official visit. Let the process go from there. Talk to the people. Tell them what you're trying to achieve. They'll put you on a program that works. They'll get you results. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Hall of Fame, Billy Sims. And you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So Brandon and I were talking about the Houston Texans, and we asked each other the question, are the Texans going to be run first under Lovie Smith in 2022, with Davis Mills as the quarterback? The offensive line looks pretty good. You drafted a guard in the teens. You spent some money on Marlon Mack. You spent draft capital in Damian Pierce. So first, I think we have to ask the question, what is run first to you? And let us know, Hive, what you think it is. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. I'll admit, I think my logic was flawed.
It's the Bill O'Brien. You run it on first down, you run it on second down, and then you try and throw a long pass on third down, and you punt. That's run first, because you ran on first down.
You think that the O'Brien offense is going to be more run first than like Lovie Smith and what the Texans do?
No, I think that this is a pass-happy league no matter what. I think that the days of being – well, first of all, you have to know your personnel. You have to know you know, like you were talking about, you have to know your roster, your personnel, and your strengths. And right now, when you look at it, and obviously you're trying to try out a new quarterback, so you're going to have to give him ample opportunities to show everything that he can do so that – but in order to be effective in this league, and I think Pep Hamilton's more of a modern-day offensive coordinator, I think that pass is the priority. And you run to kind of just off to give balance to keep the defense on its heels more than just assuming you're going to pass on every down or majority of the down.
So how would you define a run first team? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. How would you define it?
I think it's a team that has a lot of talent in the backfield and on the offensive line, and they realize that when their bread is buttered and their biggest plays are going to come. It's more like Tennessee, right? I think that from a Tennessee perspective, with a guy like Derrick Henry and the offensive line that they have, they know they can pass it and they will pass it, but they also realize that the majority of the time when they need a big play or a stabilizing play or a play to sustain a drive, they're going to go to the run before they're going to go to the pass.
See, whenever I was looking at this, when Brendan first asked me this question, which was something we talked about a couple of days ago before we talked about it today in on air, is that I was looking at just the ratio. Like, are you running the ball 55% of the time versus 45% of the time for passing the ball? Because the last Super Bowl champion that ran the ball, like literally ran the ball more than passing the ball, were the Seahawks. A long, long time ago. The last 8 Super Bowl champions have been pass first. There's only been one in the last 10 years.
That's by percentages?
By percentage. Mm-hmm. That's the ratio. And then Brendan's like, you can't look at it that way because even the most run-heavy teams in the NFL run it, what, like 47% of the time?
Oh, that was in the early 2000s.
So it's
nowadays, I believe last year every single team threw more than they ran.
So Brendan kind of changed my opinion, if I'm being completely honest with you. You can't look at it from the ratio. You almost have to look at it relative to the league. Like, if you're higher ratio running the football, if you're running it 40% of the time and that's top 10 in the NFL, that's probably a run first. I use air quotations there, a run first offense. How would you describe it, Brendan?
I just think it's an offense that prioritizes the run over the pass. They build around the run over the pass. And I don't want to say it's extreme, but it is something I feel like the Texans have prioritized at this point in time.
Instead of just saying Tennessee, because I believe that they fit the bill the best.
They would probably run it more than anybody or
I
close
think
to.
A team like Cleveland comes to mind when you have two big horse running backs. So either guy can get you at any times with Kareem Hunt as well as Chubb. And of course, with Baker at quarterback, too, you have your concerns about him slinging it anyway. So that would be a more run-first offense.
Yeah, I would put Indy on that list. I would put, like you mentioned as well, the 49ers would be on that list, right? They ran the ball nearly 500 times last year, and very much they used the running game to
They used
the
receiver as a running back, so much so that they ran the ball a lot.
Last year, the top 5 teams in terms of attempts, Titans with Henry, the Eagles because they don't trust Jalen Hurts, Baltimore because they have Lamar Jackson, the Saints because they had all the injuries, and the 49ers, Colts are very much in that mix as well. So will the Houston Texans be a run-first team, and are you okay if they are?
I don't think that they will be, and I wouldn't be okay if they are. I would look for it for balance. If it's however you want to use the metrics to decide whether it percentages or however you determine it, I believe that you have so much that you have to see from Davis Mills, that and the running backs have been upgraded. But by no means are they the kind of running backs that you're just going to say, get out of the way, hand off the ball, and let them go. That I don't think I'm going to be pleased if it's a run first offense. I believe that we have to see what Davis Mills is and what he can be. I believe that as much as you have youth and you have experience in the backfield and you have a better offensive line, that you're not auditioning guys or you're not worried about, for the most part, except for Pierce probably, the backfield in terms of guys that are going to be here long term. You are worried about your quarterback being here long term, and you're worried about a lot of other guys that you have to evaluate. So I wouldn't be too happy about that.
See, I think they're going to be run first because of Davis Mills. Like, they feel like they're going to need to establish a running game to open things up for Davis Mills. And I think the fact, too, that you drafted Kenyon Green in the teens, I mean, not a whole lot of teams. It's more popular now than it was, let's say, a decade ago. Drafting guards in the teens. Like, a lot of people still think that drafting Kenyon Green where the Texans drafted him was a bit of a reach for a guard, which, like, guards are more for the run blocking than they are the pass blocking. They can help both, but I think that shows a commitment to that as well. And then also, you have a defensive-minded head coach who is going to keep in the back of his mind, okay, well, what is one area we can help out our defense? By keeping the other offense off the field. The best way to keep the other offense off the field is an offense that can move the ball, especially with the running game, to keep that clock moving. So I think all of those are factors of why the Texans would be, and I'm okay with, if they're a run-first team.
See, and I hear that, but I think that that's the philosophy, and because of Davis Mills as one of the answers, would be if you're a team that, you know, is borderline like a 500-type football team that's trying to win a couple extras just to get into the playoffs. The fact that you have a completely, you know, start-from-scratch, retooled roster that's just trying to get good, and you're evaluating the quarterback position, that's why I would rather see them open it up more. I think Pep Hamilton's – I hear what you're saying about Lovie, but I also think Lovie respects Pep enough to realize, too, that he's not going to try and tell him how to do his job or what he wants to do. He's going to let Pep run the offense.
Yeah, I think it would be more of like, you know, the pre-meetings. Okay, this is the overall philosophy of the team. Now, Brendan did some math that might support one side of this argument.
Well, what happened essentially is I just thought that it was a foregone conclusion, honestly. I think the Texans are going to be run heavy. I think they've focused.
They've talked about it a lot.
I think they've shown a focus on it in roster management. I think that, like you said, they've talked about it. And I don't mind it short term, but long term I do. So I was looking at it, and as you said, Lovie Smith, defensive coach, I looked at his whole history, and to be fair, most of it obviously we're a little bit removed from. But in his 9 years in Chicago, he ranked basically 20th in pass to run ratio. So they were running more than passing, top 12 in the league. In Tampa Bay, he averaged 16th in 2 years, but only twice in Lovie Smith's career have they been in the top half of the league in pass percentage.
So compared relative to the league, Lovie Smith is going to run the ball more than pretty much anybody else.
And 6 times he ran the ball in the top 10 amount of times. So Lovie Smith's history tells me that he's run first. Drafting LeGuard in the top 15 tells me that he's run first. I don't mind it in the short term. I just don't think it's a good long-term plan in the NFL.
Doesn't personnel factor into that, too? If he's got a good running back and a good offensive line, that would more define it than the – and or –
I'd argue it has to.
Yeah, like, and – well, not only that, but also there are question marks on those teams from a quarterback position because the Bears team had Rex Grossman.
Yeah,
I mean, there's an exactly reason – the number – exhibit A for why you run the football.
I will tell you he was more flexible year-to-year than I thought he'd be. Like, he goes from 17 to 4 to 22 in 1 3-year span.
But see, that to me tells me that he's putting faith in his offensive coordinator.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. He was a lot more flexible than I thought he would be, but still far more common to run first than pass first.
5516 texting us in. 713-780-3776, by the way. A team that will run a ball 60% of the time as run first.
That's nobody.
Yeah, that literally does not exist in the NFL. And see, the other side of that argument, 1209, because what is a run first team? A run first team is one that tries to establish the run first.
I would
ask.
Use
the running game to set up the passing game.
Yeah. Do you run to set up the pass or pass to set up the run? Because both exist in today's NFL.
Yeah. A pass first team prefers to come out and establish the passing game first. Like, I think that the two examples that really stick out to me would be like Kansas City. Like, Kansas City doesn't give a darn if they run the ball 10 times a game, right? Like, they're going to if it's, you know, the box is not as loaded. If they're only putting 3 in the box, you have 5 guys to block. Yeah, they're going to take advantage of that because Andy Reid is shrewd. But they're going to look to kind of pass to set that up, to take the defense out of the box. And
but even a lot
holes.
Of times when they do that, they're going to do it with a screen pass instead of just handing the ball off.
Yeah, yeah. So I look at Kansas City as more pass first. We're then on the opposite end of that spectrum, for my opinion, is Kyle Shanahan's offense. We're like, even a lot of their passing plays are coming off the play action in the decoy of running the football, and also a team that runs the football basically with anybody. Like, they could stick a 6th-round pick in there, and they're going to run for 1,000 yards. And, like, which of the two do you prefer? Because to execute the Kansas City offense, like, you need an elite quarterback,
absolutely.
I think. Whereas if you're San Francisco, you can win games with Jimmy Garoppolo. You
They've
can
done
win
it.
Games with
they
Matt
They got to
Schaub.
A Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, so maybe you're I don't want to like blast Davis Mills, but maybe you're dumbing it down for Davis Mills, right? Whenever you have a run-oriented offense.
I think you have to some degree because as much as you have high expectations for this kid, he's still just going into his second year. You can't just unload the entire playbook on him and expect him to carry the weight of every play and every read and everything that he needs to do. So I think that if you didn't do that, if you didn't dummy it down a little bit and you weren't being careful, then you were being careless and you were really not giving him the best chance to succeed.
8804 has a good question, I think. Is the offensive line strong enough to hold a run-first offense?
I think the way it's being set up to be constructed right now, and we'll see when we get into the first game of the regular season as we head into week 1, but I believe that they are capable of being a run-first offense because of the fact that I believe in the 3 mainstays that they're going to have on this offensive line in the positions that they're going to be playing. I believe that Green's going to step in from day one, and he's going to be a better than average. He's going to be a good guard. I believe your 2 tackles are going to be solid. I believe Tunsil should be better than that, and he's going to protect Mills' backside. So I believe that depending on how you fill out the rest of the line and who you believe in, and if as long as there aren't any injuries, I believe they're capable.
713-780-ESPN. I think so, too. I don't think they can sustain much injury because I don't think there's a whole lot of depth there. But if their 5 stays put, I think that they could be. 713-780-3776. All right, well, we return. Talking about the Astros, a lot of people are saying, oh, this team is currently constructed, cannot win a World Series. Let's ask Jim Duquette, one of the best one of the best media members in all of baseball. Covers Major League Baseball better than anybody else. We'll talk to Jim DeCatt when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.